Welcome to the Gooder Podcast, where we talk with powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm guiding mission-driven consumer brands to attract new and passionate consumer base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. If your brand is in need of brand positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we are here to help. You can find more information at www.retail-voodoo.com.
Hi, Diana Frike here. I'm the host of the Gooder Podcast, where I get to talk to the powerhouse women in the food, beverage, and wellness categories about their journeys to success and their insights on the industry. Thanks for joining us again today. Hey, this episode is brought to you by Retail Voodoo. Retail Voodoo is a brand development firm. Our clients include Starbucks, Kind, REI, PepsiCo, Hi-Ke, and many other market leaders. We provide strategic brand and design services for leading brands in the food, wellness, beverage, and fitness industry. If your goal is to increase market share, drive growth, or disrupt the marketplace with new innovative ideas, give us a call. Let's chat. And you can find out more information at retail-voodoo.com or send me an email at info@retail-voodoo.com. Okay. So today we get to talk about staffing, resourcing, and executive recruiting in the world of better for you food, beverage, and wellness. We get to meet Angela Martorano. Did I get that right?
You got it right.
All right. Founder and president of Orchid Holistic Research. Orchid Holistic Research, not research, is an executive search firm focused exclusively on values-aligned companies in the natural products industry, placing director through C-level talent across function in organizations from startup through mid-size organizations. Well, hello, Miss Angela. How are you?
Hi, Diana. It's Friday. I've had a busy week, so I am doing great. Thanks.
All right.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. Now, are you in Detroit today?
No, I leave that as my headline and on LinkedIn. I live in Costa Rica. I'm up in the mountains in a little tiny mountain village here.
Get out. That is so awesome. How long have you been operating from there?
We've been here for a little over 3 years. We absolutely love it. It just had kind of come out of our love for Costa Rica. It was our favorite vacation spot and a way to kind of shoulder the Detroit winters, take a little trip on either side. And then we thought, wait a second, we can bring our work here. We could just make this home.
All right. Bring a little Detroit attitude to Costa Rica. Actually, it might be very complimentary.
Yes. Yeah, it's super relaxed here. Someone's got to bring some Detroit attitude.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, before we get into too many details, I always love it when my guests have an opportunity to share about their business. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Orchid Holistic Search and why you started it?
Sure. So you did a good job in the intro. We are a values aligned executive search firm. Mm-hmm. We started the business because my husband is actually a naturopathic medical doctor, right? So he had this wonderful training and insight into the world of dietary supplements, mm-hmm. ingredients, herbs and botanicals, better for you functional food and beverage. And I was recruiting at the time and I loved what I did, but it was not in a values aligned industry. I was working in accounting and finance within the mm-hmm. automotive space in 2008, 2009. It was like, a good training time, a good time to cut our teeth. And then, Matt was kind of thinking through some of his next steps in his mm-hmm. career. Mm-hmm. What else could he do as a naturopathic doctor? And we started thinking about the natural products industry. And they said, wait a second, there aren't too many people like focused on hiring talent for this space. Why don't we just jump in and do it?
Yeah.
I thought he was absolutely nuts at first, but the more we thought about it, the more I thought, hey, we're young, we're single, we're childless. Let's take a risk, and what a perfect time to do it. So that was 2010 that we jumped in.
Oh yeah, that is exactly the right time. You know, Retail Voodoo. We used to be called something else, Lemley Design. Since that's my business partner had it the name of that firm since the mid 90s, but we decided to recalibrate and focus on the better for you. It was still kind of a not a thing. Like it was still, there's still a lot of questionable products. The fruit and the vegetables weren't looking as beautiful as they do now. And of course, that's changed in the last few years, right? It's gone bonkers.
Absolutely not. So when we first started the company, I actually had my my previous employer try to sue me for starting my own company, like non-compete, even though it was definitely a completely different space. And I said, look, I'm focused in the natural products industry. And they're like, well, that doesn't even make sense. You wouldn't even be able to like make any money that way.
Oh, right, so for 2010.
Yeah, I get a little chuckle out of it because our friends and family said the same. Like, why would you pick such a tiny little niche? But look at us now. It's been a good 10 years.
It's been a good 10 years. And I'm going to guess this last year, especially with so much shifting around and movement, is it really as nuts out there finding talent and with as many people searching as the media is talking about?
100%. Mm-hmm. So 2020 was a slow year. And we planned for these things, you know, in our business, there's some ebb and flow and you just kind of have to roll with the punches. So 2020 mm-hmm. for us was a year of a lot of introspection and some shifts in the way of thinking about how we go mm-hmm. to business and, mm-hmm. And manifesting what we wanted out of 2021. Cause we knew it was going to be a big year and it is. Mm-hmm. I think part of it has to do with, 2020 being kind of companies holding back a little bit, watching the market, what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So that coupled with the great resignation, people are mm-hmm. kind of realizing what they really want out of a company work life and mm-hmm. culture and all of these good things. And then, you know, just the growth that our industry has enjoyed, right? I mean, more and more people are eating, more consciously and taking supplements. So all in all, it's kind of like a triple whammy and we've had a crazy year and yes, everybody's looking.
Everybody's
in case
looking.
That's a question. Yeah, everybody's looking.
Well, it's it just seems to me like I wonder if you're running into any of these, you know, with the naturals, which of course the boundaries of what naturals are is getting a little bit blurry and foggy, especially with the really big CPG coming in and being able to bend things. And I wonder how that people moving from a traditionally conventional space into this, into a more narrower category. Are you seeing interest? Like, are people wanting to move into naturals or is it just people moving around in general?
Definitely people want to move into naturals. And I think our focus over the last year has shifted even more from naturals into conscious naturals. Mm-hmm, because like mm-hmm. you said, there's more movement. You've got mm-hmm. You've got big CPGs, you know, with very deep pockets, mm-hmm. copycatting brands, right? Mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm. rightfully so. They see what's happening with these small brands and they're copying it. But the heart and the soul, of the companies that we like to support, we like to work with, that's where people want to be.
Yeah.
They don't want to work with, a big CPG company's natural brand so much. They really want to go work with a founder that has
an ethos passion
and the passion.
Yeah. Well, I would expect that, and you've probably had plenty of these conversations, but it's so much harder to steer the Titanic and to even have a visibility on leadership or in reality if you've got 13 layers between you or even two layers between you and the person that's steering the Titanic. So I think it's, I think it can be tricky, right? There's always strengths and weaknesses to either side. How much of an impact do you want versus how much mobility do you want within an organization? I bet those are lots of questions that you have during your process with potential candidates, I think. Yeah.
I do. Yeah. There are certain people that, you know, they want a certain level of stability, which is understandable, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, you know, I would look at companies in the $25 to $50 million range versus yep. there are some people who are like, nope, I want to steer the ship. I want it to be a wild yep. and crazy ride. I want to get in ground floor and I want to see the decisions that I make yep. Impact the business greatly. Yeah. So then you've got a lot of people who crave that experience.
Yeah. That's good that you're able to vet for that. Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the early days when you first started, you know, you first started Orchid. Do you call it Orchid for short when you guys are, or do you cut OHS or do you have an acronym?
Yeah, we could call it Orchid.
That's, okay. Yeah. Okay. So the that early happens. Days, yeah, in the early days of, you know, you're searching or building the business. Tell us what those were like. Was it struggle? Was it easy? Were there things that you learned about that you didn't consider at the time?
Yeah. So starting the business, it was me on my couch with a spreadsheet that Matt and I had put together. And in the very early days, we focused exclusively on dietary supplements.
Okay.
So
gotcha.
We had a spreadsheet, right? Started making cold calls. Matt was like, are you cool? Like cold calling companies? And I'm like, yeah, that's what I do. Done. I'll do mm-hmm. it. So here I am cold calling down an alphabetical spreadsheet of dietary supplement companies. And our very first client was Alicer. So we did not have to get very far down that list to realize that we had a potential market fit. And in fact, we were actually our hope was to place more naturopaths into the industry. That was our initial thought and our initial concept. So when I was on the phone with the vice president of HR, she's like, Angela, yeah, we don't need any naturopaths, but we do have a vice president of operations. Could you help us with that? And we're like, yep, sure.
Sure can.
And that was our first search and we were successful and they were kind of that dream client that, you know, good people, strategic, had a good path to exit. And we were able to place several folks with them and the first 18 months of our business. So they gave us a really nice start.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my goodness. So tell us a little bit about, can you tell a little bit about anything surprising that happened in that first year? Kind of like I didn't expect that to happen. I mean, that might have just been the expectation, but I'm just thinking maybe even operationally, some of the things that you learned about the market, or you'd already come in with a fair bit amount of business. So I wonder, maybe the question is how different was it from what you were doing before?
It was very different. I found it to be a whole lot less transactional than the automotive space. I mean, we started to have conversations about what is your culture like, because that doesn't really happen when you're, you know, at least 10 years ago in automotive.
Sure.
It was, you know, what are you making, and how much is the compensation, and how far is the commute to the office?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So values, we started learning about the importance of values within the organizations. There are some competitors in this space. So we're kind of feeling that out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, we kind of found our niche, which was placing people in sales, marketing, and operations within rapidly growing dietary supplement brands. Mm-hmm. Definitely the culture piece was better than we had anticipated.
Oh my gosh.
And the need was a lot different, right? We're not placing naturopaths. In fact, we're placing executives and ops. So.
Yeah. Wow. Do you have any, it's been 10 years, of course, since you started doing this. What kind of milestones can you look back on and kind of go, this was a pivotal moment for us, maybe where you went from supplements to a broader range of products, and what did that look like? And was it a conscious choice or was it an opportunity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was at Expo West.
Okay.
And this must have been like 2013, let's call it. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to poach someone from Vega, right? a leader at Vega. And they were like, actually, No, I'm super happy. Vega is an amazing company. Can you help us with some searches? So Vega was kind of the transition to more of that, not strictly the pills and capsules, right? Not just the tablets, but it was a lifestyle brand, right? And it was plant-based. And so, yeah, that was 2013, I believe. And so that was one exciting milestone. And shortly after that, I want to say it was 2015, we switched from a contingency basis to retained.
Okay.
We realized, let's cut the crap. We're going to work with companies who value working with us. And we created a stronger process for ourselves, for our clients, and we saw a huge uptick in business.
Really?
Big. And so that was kind of like a, all right, I've cut my teeth for a few years. I've had some success, but now let us work with companies who value us.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, it was like a personal power move, I think, at that point. So it felt really pivotal.
Mm-hmm.
And it really catapulted the business forward.
Mm-hmm. When you think of, I'm assuming that you probably have had a number of people partner with you internally, freelance, even on an FTE basis to kind of help you during some of those bigger needs, I guess, or periods of time where you're going through a lot of growth personally. Are you finding yourself giving people doing what you do advice at all? I mean, I don't know. Do you have a network of people, HR people or placement folks that basically do what you do? Are you guys friendly? Do you help each other out?
Yeah, there are several people that play in the same space, and I definitely try to keep on a very friendly level. I think there's enough room for all of us in this space, right? And you know, I think we solidly operate from a mindset of abundance versus scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm never one that's going to be like, oh, competitor over there, this competitor. We all have strengths and weaknesses, I'm sure. And I think there's room for everybody, and everybody's style is a little bit different. So I definitely am on friendly terms with several recruiting firms. And sometimes we trade notes like, hey, have you worked with that client? Or, oh, I saw that you were working with this person. What happened there? And and then in terms of having people work with me or for me and support in a support capacity, I've actually only tried that once and it didn't work out, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
It was someone who had worked for a competitor, a competing firm, let's say, in the space. And I thought this should be pretty easy, but it wasn't. I've got founder tendencies myself.
I don't know what that could possibly be, being one myself.
Yeah, I have certain quality standards that I adhere to really strongly, right? Mm-hmm. And I think part of what makes us special is that I can say that I've placed every single person myself.
Really?
Right? I'm not passing it along to someone else, or you know, training. So like, if you hire me to take care of your search, it's not going to be someone I'm training,
right?
That's going to take it on. I only take on a handful of searches, and I make sure those searches are well taken care of.
Yeah. So this is not about. Everybody is in business to make money, so I don't want to say that it's not like you're offering pro bono work or anything like that, but the care that you want, it's not about you growing your business. It's legitimately to help other businesses be able to succeed in what their missions are.
That's right. So we will never be the biggest. I never want that for myself. There's been many times that I've been tempted when I'm starting to get an uptick in search needs, like, oh, maybe we should hire somebody. We should hire somebody. But the bottom line is I earn a very nice living, and we enjoy the work that we do, and we enjoy being sole practitioners. Yeah. And what that means is over time, we get better searches, we get bigger searches. Mm-hmm. And so that part, we are able to grow, right? Mm-hmm. And as I optimize my process, yeah, we do grow, and but from the standpoint of, you know, wanting to take over the industry or take on 17 pages of searches at once. It's never
well, I want to talk a little bit about, there were a couple of really I want to say deep. I don't want to get too over, I don't know, wooey about this, but we talked about a couple of really sensitive, crunchy, tricky topics when we first met. And one of them was this huge emphasis in diversity and inclusion initiatives that the companies were already starting to get into, but accelerated definitely during 2020 because of the Black Lives Movement, the Me Too movement. I mean, we had a handful of initiatives that suddenly created a wokeness, real or not, amongst companies and executives across the country. And I wonder, how are you guiding employers through this? Like, they're coming to you. There are people that are probably coming to you that think they're genuine in their effort, are legitimately wanting to make a difference. What do you offer? Are you talking to them? Are you giving them resources? Talk me through that when they come to you and go, hey, I want to check this box. And I get that it's a box, but I'm legitimate about this. How do you support them through this?
Yeah. So I think it's a tricky topic because as a, white woman myself, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't really feel like I am the best resource. We're not a diversity and inclusion firm, right? Right. We've taken our own unconscious bias trainings. Mm-hmm. We would like to consider ourselves to be as inclusive as we possibly can during search process. Mm-hmm. We love working with companies that have that as a North Star, like wanting diversity within their organizations. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can kind of tell it's like they say it because they know that they need to. Mm-hmm. Right. And other times I've worked with clients who have an extremely impressive roadmap to DEIB work and are working with consultants, and those are the companies that I can get even more excited about, we're helping them and recruiting diversity talent for them. Yeah. There's honestly only one that comes to mind that I know is legit from that standpoint in the work that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And they've been wonderful to work with. And I've placed 3 diversity candidates with them on all 3 searches that I've taken on. So, what I suggest to clients is that they really get serious about their internal, what are they doing internally? What are their goals? And do they have support from an actual trained professional? Cause I can't be that. I can't be that right. to everybody, but, what I can do is we definitely, provide a diverse candidate network. Mm-hmm. We took a look like really deeply at what we were doing and the placements mm-hmm. that we were making. Mm-hmm. And in early 2020, we realized that over the first 10 years of business, from what we could ascertain from the placements that we'd made, it was only 9.3% people of color. Mm. Over the last year, that number has moved to 46%.
Excellent.
Just with us having conversations with our clients, letting them know that they might need to open their search up past, we want natural CPG experience, because if we're recycling candidates in the same talent pool, we'll yep. never get anywhere.
Right.
But if there's an openness to look beyond, to maybe look outside of the industry, and to actually value that we're not, trying to make a culture fit, but we're right. adding to the culture and bringing right. that diverse thought process, whether yes. that be religious or skin tone or mm-hmm. age, mm-hmm. all of that comes together. And so, mm-hmm. we've done quite a bit of work. I'm sure there's more that we can do, but I'm pretty proud of how far we've come and what I've seen in the industry so far. It's inspiring.
Yeah. I think it's inspiring too. And I think that's you and I kind of bonded a little bit on that, because that was one of my primary goals with the Gooder podcast was to normalize diversity and everything from skin color to LGBTQ, the disabled, religious, immigrant status, military. I mean, all of those things are grossly underrepresented in the leadership. And you're right. if we are only looking for perfect fits and the perfect fit looks like X, Y, and Z, that's never going to change. And so I think it's wonderful. And, you know, when we're doing brand development, that's part of the conversation that we have about how they look at their audience. Like the naturals industry is targeting mostly Caucasian upper middle class women. How are we going to target, how are we going to grow this category unless we understand the needs, of which there are a tremendous needs, but if we're not looking there, how are we going to get there? So I love that you're able to have, just by the consciousness, being able to make and start making some changes there. Are you able to help some of these? I mean, I don't know how deep your relationships are, but are you able to have kind of relationships and help these hiring managers or your partners resolve or understand what unconscious bias looks like? I think you just addressed that, but I'm just asking it outright in this way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such an important topic that I don't like to pretend that I can.
Sure.
Deliver that as a part of sure. my service, right? Mm-hmm. But what I do is I do always encourage, I let clients know upfront that that's mm-hmm. a part of our search process, is to include diversity on every slate of talent that we present mm-hmm, mm-hmm. when at all possible. And I do let them know that when they place very stringent requirements, it's less likely that I'm going to be able to deliver yeah. on that. Right. So that kind of is a screening basis up mm-hmm. front.
Gotcha.
For the types of clients that we like to partner with, for mm-hmm. better or for worse. Mm-hmm.
And now flip the conversation over to the candidate side. I'm only a woman. And when we talk about from the diversity standpoint, I don't check a lot of the boxes. And so I wonder how tricky it is for candidates to navigate this type of thing. Are you having similar kinds of conversations with them? Are you helping them resolve the fact that they might be moving into a box check, but that everybody knows it's a box check and it's a learning. And I'm trying to use box check as a neutral term, not a bad term. It's like people legitimately want to make change. And sometimes checking a box is, and knowing that there's a box and checking the box is the first step to making that change. And I'm wondering, as you're having those conversations, are you able to provide any guidance to those candidates who are interested in helping with the change, knowing that they're coming in for a really great job opportunity, but they're also going to have an impact on the company in a much larger way?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. And I think a lot of candidates, they do kind of want to know, they're like, where do I stand? Is there yeah. actually, like, once I get in, is my voice going to be heard?
Gotcha. Uh-huh.
Or I've worked with a couple of candidates who were the token person in their mm-hmm. organization, token Black person, token gay person. Mm-hmm. Am I jumping from a situation like this to another one, or how mm-hmm. is it going? Like, how is my voice going to be included? And rather than necessarily even have a huge, robust DEI roadmap for 18 months, which some people do and some organizations don't, yeah. they just want to know, is my voice going to be heard, right? Am I going to have any level of influence in the organization? Usually the answer is yes, because we work at leadership level.
Right.
So
right.
It's kind of a catch 22.
That makes sense. Yeah.
But usually, yes, the roles that we're filling are mission critical to a company, and these candidates are sitting on the leadership team. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they are able to, and I like to work with companies that allow people to bring their full self to work. And that's part of my application process. Like,
is it,
who are you as a human being? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think
that.
Candidates over the past year have been like, wow, I really enjoyed filling out your application because no one's asked me that question before. I yeah. ask, like, who are you as a marketing leader? And then who are you as a human being?
Really?
It allows people to feel like, oh, maybe they care about me. You know,
yeah.
maybe I'm not just an application. And I do try to embody that inclusiveness throughout mm-hmm. my process. So that's a little off topic, but.
I suspect then you have these really rich relationships with people for a long time because of that, because now they're a human rather than a number.
And I've worked with so many great people, and I'm at that stage where it's been over 10 years. It's almost 12 now. So I've placed people, you know, 2 and 3 times now.
Oh, really?
Sometimes over their career. Yeah. So, you know, we get to know one another, and when an opportunity comes up, they know I'll think of them, and they know I know a little bit, you know, about them as a human being. And maybe I don't know their kids' birthdays or, you know, their favorite restaurant, but I know what's important to them in terms of, you know, an opportunity to make a meaningful difference. And I remember those sorts of things. And they know that I at least treat them with a ton of respect and care in the process.
Yeah. And with as though they're a human, I think that's really awesome. I love that. Now, with this kind of crazy time that we've got going on during 2020, I have the same question for both candidate and then potential employers. And that is, what is the advice you find yourself giving most? And this might be regardless of the fact that it's crazy. Like, what do you find yourself guiding and giving advice to employers on during this type of process, and then with candidates?
Mm-hmm. So for candidates, I think there are a lot of self-limiting beliefs that are starting to crash down. And what I tell candidates, and especially in the space that I work and the niche that I've crafted, you can have it all. I think it's possible. So I think you can have an employer that respects you. I think you can have a job that is meaningful. I think you can sell or make products that make a difference, that have an impact. And you can have your family and your life and your time, and you can have it all. And I know that because I feel to a pretty large degree that I have it all. So I know it's possible. Yeah. And I know a lot of my clients, you know, want that for their employees too. So I really help guide people to make the right decision. It sucks when they don't pick the offer, you know, they don't choose the, sometimes, you know, they go with a different company, but they need to know that I'm there to help align them with their own North Star throughout the process. And that's why people trust me, I think.
And on the employer side, do you see yourself giving a common set of advice?
I do. And it's that it's the golden rule, right? We have to, if you want someone to give their all, value them. And that sometimes means, and it could come in the negotiation process, right? If someone's asking for 150 and you immediately offer them 140, that's just diminishing the level of value you place on them on day one. So a lot of these conversations can be shaped and molded and you know, elevated by working with someone like myself, right? Who can help be the middle person in that relationship and in those early days, and like, well, wait, this is important to this person and this is really important to the company. Can we make this work? Are we on the same page or maybe not? So, but yeah, it would be, it's a pretty similar thing, right? I think you can have your dream candidate, but you probably can't do it by just spraying out the JD on LinkedIn. You're never going to get that diversity quotient,
right?
You know, by just spraying the job posting on LinkedIn, using multiple recruiters, trying to get it through your own network because your investors all look like you and your financiers all look like you and your advisors all look like you. And you're going to co-create the sameness in your organization.
Yes.
So I think, you know, if companies really want to invest in their talent, then they need to invest in the talent process, period, from day one. And I think that does come along with investing in hiring a recruiter who can really bring you the best and work on behalf of the client and the candidate.
Okay. I love that. We use recruiters as well. And have had good success and not good success. I mean, it's sometimes, you know, you're still at the end of the day, you're the one that's hiring and making the final decision. I have a question for you though, because I find, and this might be recruiting practice that is not common. So I'll just ask it. there have been plenty of times where we have worked with a recruiter and we've given all of our parameters. And this is for the financial standpoint. And we'll say, this is the top of where we're at. And I'm thinking of one particular recruiter that we don't use anymore. And this is probably why they would always present somebody that was over the cap of our situation. And then we would end up trying to get into a little bit of a negotiation with the candidate. It was always a little tricky. How would you advise me as somebody who uses recruiting services to have that conversation with the recruiter, other than me saying, you know, this was our cap. Why are you bringing us candidates that don't fit into what our needs are? Do you understand what I'm asking?
I do. And that's a really important conversation and part of the trust and relationship building from a recruiter and a client perspective up front. And I can think of one particular scenario this year where a bigger company than we normally work with, it was like a $200 million brand, came to us and they wanted a brand manager, but as it turned out, they kind of needed a brand director.
Oh. Right?
And so they asked me, hey, we were recommended to you and your firm. What would you say would be a range for this position, given what we're asking of the candidate?
Yeah.
And I told them, and I said, really, you're looking at 150 to 200.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, ooh, well, we were thinking of 1 to 150 and they need to relocate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I said, all right, you know what, let me think about it while we're getting our, you know, paperwork in place and that. But it's really going to have to be dictated by the market right now.
Yeah.
Period. And I let them know. And we ended up hiring a candidate who was 170.
Wow.
And that was above their range, right? Above the range they had wanted. And we elevated the title because that's what the market demanded.
Sure.
But, you know, what I would say is, A, you've got to know what the market is doing at the moment. And you've got to get really clear from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And if a company is going to tell me they want to hire a head of growth at 120, well, then I'm just not going to take that search. It's because it's not realistic.
It's not realistic.
It's not realistic. And what I like to do is I like to present a range of candidates. You're probably going to get a couple that are right within your range. You're probably going to get one on the low side that's kind of green working their way into the level.
Mm.
And you might get a superstar that's like, all right, well, this person's 10K above your range.
Yeah.
But they're like everything and more. So, you know, take your pick. And usually it ends up that the client ends up hiring one of the top end because they bring the most value and experience.
Makes sense.
I think it's just important to get really clear in the beginning of the process before they even take your search.
Yeah. And even asking, so if I was going to bring a candidate to you that looked like blank, is that going to be okay? Or are you set on blank? You know, that's, I think.
Yeah, I always do that. Like, okay, so if I find the very perfect person, they're not that there's a perfect person out there, but if I find someone who meets A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and they're above your range, do you not want to see them? And then they're like, well,
excellent. Okay, good. Thank you for that. Well, you know, Angela, I there's probably a whole host of other things that we could talk about kind of more granularly, but I think that we covered kind of those biggies that you and I wanted to talk about here on the show. And as we're coming into the end of the podcast, I'm going to switch gears and we're going to just talk about, well, I'm going to ask you a few questions that I ask absolutely every guest. And so the first one is, do you have some sort of, I like call it happy hour factoid that you can share about the industry? And this could be either about recruiting or since you've been working with supplements and wellness brands for so long, maybe you have some sort of interesting, like, I don't even know what it could be about those industries that somebody could share over a cocktail later this week.
Mm. All right. Well, it's not industry specific, but as it relates to recruiting, a lot of people have this conversation about counter offers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there is a statistic that I like to share with everybody because I think it makes a lot of sense before you even start looking for a job to consider, wait, what if my company actually does want me more than more than I know, and they come back and they want to offer me more money?
Yeah.
When a company does that, the candidate is only statistically going to stay for an average of 6 months after that. So you have to really get clear with yourself, and you have to understand that, and you have to realize that after that, you know, counter offer happens, you're probably not going to be there for much longer anyway. So get clear in the fact that you probably shouldn't accept that counter offer in the first place. And if you have one toe out the door, step out when the going's good.
Okay. Okay. That's interesting. Okay. Are there any women in the industry, again, recruiting or in this wellness space, that you are wanting to elevate, you think are rising stars? Just simply give a shout out for the work that they're doing right now.
Yeah, there are a couple of women in the space. They're both independent consultants, right? And different service providers. Mm-hmm. One is Candace Sherman. And she just stepped off on her own to build King Lou's. It's a natural pet snack brand, but she's also doing fractional consulting work, marketing, digital marketing.
Okay.
And she's super values aligned. I think she gives her all. She understands the space really well. And Casey Plachek, Casey is an ops consultant. So she can come in and help you with your logistics and supply chain and on a fractional basis or a consulting basis. Mm-hmm. So those two are great for really startup brands who might need some additional support on a part-time basis or just before they call someone like myself to hire full-time.
Yes.
And they need to fill in that gap for a short amount of time. Those are two awesome women, and they're super values aligned and very much in tune with the space.
Wow. That's cool. I like that. Yeah. I have a little a little spreadsheet of all the fractionals, because I run across people who want the services of retail voodoo, and then they go, oh, but our fees are not in alignment with what they're, and usually they're younger and startups type of brands, but, I always have a pocket full of fractionals that go, okay, well, here's for the next couple of years, you might want to work with this person or this person. So I'll have to get those names from you to add them to my list. Thank you for sharing those, folks.
You're welcome.
What brands or trends are you keeping your eye on right now, and why?
Yeah, so great question. I think, you know, first of all, the herbal and botanical space is heating up. It's been heating up. It's been here for thousands of years via mm-hmm. Ayurvedic and traditional medicine. But it's here to stay in a big way. So, you know, that space is huge. Anything functional mushroom related, you know, whether it be in the beverage space, adaptogens, whether it be, you know, mushroom packaging, I love seeing innovation in that space.
Yes.
For the mental health space, psilocybin mushrooms. Mm-hmm. I'm watching that space closely.
Really?
I think there's a lot to be said. Oh yeah. For the direction of mental health in this country. And herbs and mushrooms are my go-tos always.
Mm-hmm. So then are you actively helping those brands in the hemp and CBD space as well? Is there a lot of movement there?
I would say that we don't do as much I'm a big supporter of hemp and CBD. Yeah. The industry's been a little interesting, you know, just regulation wise and movement wise. So a big believer, but personally don't do a ton of work in that space right now. Once we're legal and good to go and there's no gray area anymore, mm-hmm. I think it'll be you know, a nice play for us as well.
I just interviewed somebody recently who does hemp and CBD research, and she's been a huge activist at a political level and has a lot of sway and say. And she speculated that 12 months, she said, she says it's the FDA that's really more the problem child than the other type of regulatory with banking. Once the FDA says it's a go, she expects it to open up, and they had expected it to happen in 2020, but FDA shifted their focus to COVID. And so she anticipates that as COVID starts to, whenever the heck it starts to go away, that CBD and hemp will be on that flip side. Then
anyway. I would hope that we get it done during this administration. I think it's time. I think everybody's here for it.
Right. I mean, we're all just half of us, more than half of us are rolling our eyes half the time around this stuff, but I get it. You know, if you are not a believer and there's a personal ideology that it's not aligned with, that's great. It's but it sure makes it tricky for commerce and business. We'll get there. Yeah. Well, hey, we've been talking with Angela Marturano, founder and president of Orchid Holistic Search. Angela, if people wanted to learn more about what you do or just simply get you on their radar, what's the best way to do that?
LinkedIn. I hang out there quite a bit. I like to post a little bit about Costa Rica living. I like to post a little bit about the trials and tribulations of working in search, tips and tricks for candidates, and just share a little bit about life and connect with people there. So that's the best way to find me.
Awesome. After our call, I'm going to connect you with my friend. In your spare time, you can meet each other. I don't know, maybe. But I want to thank you, Angela, for your time today. And I really appreciate your input and feedback and for all that you're doing in the world of naturals. Really excited to have you on today. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Diana. It's really been a pleasure. I appreciate you. You're a great interviewer.
Oh, thank you. And we'll catch you guys all next time.
Perfect. Sounds great. Enjoy your weekend.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to click subscribe and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.